conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under the radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. We did it! 2024 is just around the corner, and it promises to be a very interesting year, particularly in the Detroit area. But before we say hello to the new year, let's take a look back at what happened to the state's largest city in 2023. Here with me to break down the year in Detroit news is Sarah Rahal from the Detroit News. Sarah, welcome back to Mishmash.
Thank you for having me, Shayna.
So Sarah, what would you say is the most significant story coming out of 2023 for Detroit?
I personally think that covering the 10-year anniversary of Detroit's bankruptcy was by far the biggest story. It was the largest municipal bankruptcy in U.S. history, and I think we can all agree that Detroit didn't just come back, it really never left. This is the Paris of the Midwest, and it's thriving. It's got art, groundbreaking, small business entrepreneurship, you know, medical breakthroughs, and chart-topping music, and just so much spirit. But still, some residents in the city, city's most crime-ridden neighborhoods, say that public services aren't as good as it should be, and the retiree benefits are still trying to be made whole from the concessions that they made during the bankruptcy.
And what are some of the stories that you're going to be keeping an eye on as we start 2024?
So the mayor has proposed improving some city services, like increasing trash pickups, bulk trash, recycling to weekly, which it isn't weekly right now. This would come at an added cost to the city, but it is something that the city council is reviewing in the new year. Also, there's a lot of plan upgrades coming to Hart Plaza, to Belle Isle. A lot of ARPA or American Rescue Plan Act funds have to be spent. So we can expect to see a lot of beautification and upgrades in the new year. There's also so many things happening between the NFL draft coming to Campus Martius, to Michigan Central, the abandoned train station finally being reopened and open to visitors next spring. The city's also going super green. You know, we have Duggan's solar program that's rolling out and a lot of marijuana businesses that are starting to take foot in the city, which hasn't happened yet.
Speaking of all that beautification, you kind of touched on it. The NFL draft is coming to Detroit. And it sounds like a part of this whole, we're going to do more to beautify Detroit is to make the city look really great for that. Talk to us more about what to expect with the draft coming to Detroit.
Yeah, so there is a push to get the city cleaned up well before Detroit takes the national stage in April when we're hosting the 89th annual NFL draft at Campus Martius. It's been Duggan's motive the entire year to turn blight into beauty. So there has been just so much ramping up with demolitions in residential neighborhoods, as well as commercial buildings, and even getting started on the Packard plant. There's so much going on besides that. There's the Mural City Initiative, which is turning abandoned buildings into renowned canvases for art. It's got a huge push from the mayor's office to make sure that we look like the best city when camera crews come in. So we're starting with the abandoned homes that are lining the freeways. That's just one piece of the bigger puzzle.
We also have a major election coming up in 2024, local, statewide, presidential. It's huge. And in November, you reported on Detroit City Councilwoman Mary Waters looking into possibly running to overtake U.S. Rep. Sheree Tanidar's seat. Where do things stand with Waters and that race now?
She's still pondering it, but I think it's more than just pondering it at this point. We've seen a couple things change in City Council. City Council President Mary Sheffield has filed documentation saying that she's intending to run for mayor. And right after that, we saw that at-large member Mary Waters was putting her bid to possibly challenge Tanidar in that seat. But she's not the only one. Former state senator Adam Hollier, who previously ran, is running again. And he has announced that he is challenging Tanidar for the 13th congressional district. So we will have a very exciting race here.
That's definitely one to keep an eye on because it is Tanidar's first re-election. He's only served one term, so it'll be really interesting to see how he fares with fellow candidates yet again. I want to move on to something that I don't know that a lot of people know about. I know I didn't know about. Detroit has a Grand Prix, and it is returning to downtown. Tell us more about what's going on there.
Yeah, it was the first year that Detroit Grand Prix was off of Belle Isle and a return to downtown Detroit. And we can expect even more race cars next year, possibly even double, just from the successful way it went.
I want to shift gears and talk about a couple of topics that are kind of lingering, that the effects we're going to keep feeling are going to be very real, both now and in 2024, one of which is the UAW strikes. Those were quite historic, and you covered them this year. Talk to us more about what happened with the strikes, and then sort of like what is the impact that we might be seeing in 2024?
Shana, there isn't a reporter in the city who hasn't covered the UAW strikes. But no, I appreciate it. On September 15th, the UAW launched a historic strike against the Big Three. And for the first time, we really saw the strike unfold on social media across the country with inclusive messaging and an invitation to the bargaining table, which is just unheard of. It lasted 40 days, and the UAW reached a record benefit with a new president, Sean Fain. And it really was the year of union strikes. UAW really took the headlines, but the casino workers in Detroit were on strike even longer, 47 days. And on December 3rd, 4,000 workers voted on a new contract with MGM Grand, Greektown, and Motor City.
Wow. And tell us more about some of the rallies and protests that have been ramping up in the Detroit area as well, currently, and are probably expected to continue into 2024.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are definitely seeing protests ramp up against pro-Israel candidates. People are being very divisive on this issue, and whether it's about the humanitarian crisis that's unfolding and Palestinians leaving Gaza, or it's about who's funding candidates in the United States, there's been a push to call for a ceasefire, whether it's locally, statewide, nationally. You're seeing protests internationally taking Instagram by storm. This is not something that we're accustomed to, and it can't really be compared to the Black Lives Matter movement. I think that this is coming with the first generation immigrants and the people who have seen their parents' plight to feel the need to stand up for their place in the Middle East. And if you look at the numbers, Palestinians are only secondary to resettling in Michigan. So many resettle in Chicago, and Wayne County has the second most in the nation. So we do have a great presence into the people who are so passionate about this topic, but want to have their voices heard for the bigger collective. The issue is that these protests can sometimes get out of hand, and lately they've become more aggressive, specifically in Sri Thanedar's case. He's been very outspoken, pro-Israel, and is denying any sort of conversation that involves a ceasefire. But that actually differs from the Wayne County Commission that just approved a ceasefire, and the Detroit City Council, which also approved a resolution to ceasefire. So you can kind of see these conflicting views even among Democrats and on a local basis. All the more reason why we're going to have a very interesting election coming up, and who's going to make their voices heard.
There's some good news for Detroit residents in the form of a land value tax plan. Talk to us more about what Detroit homeowners might expect in 2024.
During his 10th State of the City address, Mayor Mike Duggan introduced his land value tax plan, which remains stalled in the Michigan legislature. It would tax owners of vacant land at a higher rate than those of homes or structures on their properties. At least 97% of homeowners are expected to get a tax cut if the plan passes. However, you're going to see scrap yards and abandoned buildings skyrocket in tax price. And the motive behind this is that Detroit is actually rewarding blight, that land actually depreciates in taxes as it sits vacant. And so instead, Duggan's proposing to give homeowners who have been overtaxed in the past by a record number of $600 million a break, and in turn going to tax the people who are just sitting on land and possibly making it an eyesore. And this is something that would be transformational, because currently Detroit has the highest mills in the state to live in. If it passes, it would put it on par with, Dearborn, Grosse Pointe, and the surrounding suburbs.
Do you have a sense of what is holding this up in the legislature?
I think that there's some confusion among the numbers, how we're calculating these property taxes and how it would impact the rest of the state by changing it. You know, our car insurance is the highest in the state, in Detroit, and in the country. We're not sure if it impacts that, and we're really not sure what the outcomes, what the if it should pass, what the downside would be.
And speaking of Detroit residents, the city is experiencing its lowest unemployment rate in 20 years. But when you and I were talking before we started recording, you mentioned that the city's actually losing its population. What's going on there, and what's the concern with those two numbers?
Yeah, our unemployment rate's under 6%. And according to the US Census Bureau, Detroit is actually losing population, about 8,000 people from 2020 to 2022. We have about 620,000 people, making us the 29th most populous city in the US. Although Duggan fights those numbers and says it should be a lot higher, he believes there's about 700,000 or so people. Based off of DTE records and water level records. But we also know that the city has become a welcoming center for refugees and asylum seekers. So there's a lot of people who are here, but maybe just not documented.
Finally, in 2024, Detroit is getting a new area code. What's happening there?
679, because 313 ran out, apparently. I still have my 313 number, and apparently it's a hot commodity, so I'm not getting rid of it. But it is going to be interesting. I think that sometimes when we see phone numbers and caller IDs, we tend to not pick up because we don't know the area code. So it's really important for people to know 679 is a local number now.
Fortunately, it doesn't quite have the same, I don't know, flow. Like 313's got some attitude to it. 679, I don't
Right.
know.
Like, when are we going to start seeing it on apparel? Like, are we going to see it soon or?
Sarah Rahal, reporter for the Detroit News, thank you so much for joining me here today on Mishmash.
Shayna, thanks for having me.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and the incredible Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim, Sophia Joswiak, Jack Philbrandt, and Jenny Sherman. As always, if you listen to this show and you want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review. Or if you really, really like this podcast, and we really hope you do, you can support WDET. Just go to WDET.org/give. Without your generous contributions and support, shows like Mishmash and all the other great work done by WDET would not be possible. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.